Okay, I'm going to call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order and let the record reflect that the time is currently 1:35 p.m. on March 23rd, 2021. And present today, we've got Representative Thompson, Representative Levon, Representative Edgman, Vice Chair Ortiz, Co-Chair Merrick, Representative Rasmussen, Representative Josephson, Representative Wool, Representative Johnson, myself, Co-Chair Foster. And as we start, just a reminder, if folks can mute their cell phones, we've got two items before us today. And the first presentation will be a continuation of the Alaska Marine Highway System with Rob Carpenter, Deputy Commissioner, and then the second will be an overview of COVID funding, FY 21 and 22 budget overview and update from the DOT, and we'll have Dom Pannone, ASD Director. So with that, let's see here. We will go ahead and start with Mr. Carpenter. Rob, are you online?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. If you could put yourself on the record.
Yes, sir. Rob Carpenter, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Transportation and Facilities.
Great. Thanks for joining us again today. Yeah, if you could go ahead and which slide did we leave off on yesterday? Five.
We were five. Just finishing slide five.
Okay.
If I might, my support lines, they just had a power failure in Ketchikan, and they are trying to log back in as we speak.
Okay. Oh, and you need Mr. McLaren for this slide, is that right? We could always jump around, too, if there are other slides that you're planning on focusing on.
Sure. Okay. They'll be with me when they can get here. All right. Given the line of questioning yesterday, we actually snuck in a couple new slides for you. Moving on to slide 6 and 7, we brought in some ridership slides and some capacity utilization. You can see here on slide 6, we're showing the vehicle ridership and the passenger ridership from 1989 to present. Along with the red line there is the operating weeks, which we were showing in the previous slides. So trying to depict or give you a viewpoint of what's happening given that those operating weeks. And I think the general gist here, which has been the case for quite some time now, is that vehicles are pretty steady and always have been. There's definitely a continuous decline of the passenger count, even beyond the reduction in the service weeks. And I think Matt McLaren is back online now. He might have some more to add on this slide because I was going to leave this one mostly to him. Are you on now, Matt?
I'm on, yes.
Okay. Mr. McLaren, yeah. You put yourself on the record.
Sure. Chair, for the record, Matt McLaren, Business Manager for Marine Highway System. Deputy Commissioner Carpenter covered it pretty well here. We've got pretty consistent vehicle traffic back to 1989. Passenger traffic, of course, has fluctuated quite a bit, along with a steady decline in the last, since about 2005. So a lot of that we think has to do with more convenience for air travel and different methods for passengers to travel around without their vehicles. And so we've seen a little bit of decline there. It has followed pretty close there with our operating weeks as the red line. But of course, there's not a 100% direct correlation there between those two, but it has followed fairly close anyway.
We've got a question from Representative Thompson and then Ortiz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just wondering what kind of a seasonal change do we have in the passenger transportation on this? Is it during the summer months a lot heavier and then in the winter worse than what this shows, or how does that fit in?
Through the chair, Representative Thompson, it is definitely a seasonal system. We have a lot more traffic traveling around in our summer months between May through September. We get 60 to 70% of our overall annual traffic is in those summer months. Thank
you. Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. McLaren, is a factor in relationship to declining ridership, is there a connection between over the last 7 or 8 years where we haven't had a known supply out there because we weren't ever able to provide the department with the funding level, which would give them a known operating week? So in other words, has there been a growing deterioration in the confidence of riders in the Marine Highway system simply because the schedules haven't been out there soon enough? People haven't known what the situation is going to be with the Marine Highway system, so therefore there's been a decrease in confidence amongst riders based on just the gradual trend, cuts in funding that have taken place, and therefore the gradual certainty, the certainty has gone away in the system. Is that a fair statement?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, I would say that's a fair statement. We do get a lot of calls early on from people, especially tour operators, travel agents that want to book far in advance. We are looking at right now the last 5 to 10 years. We're doing some analysis right now and seeing if there's a correlation of when we put the schedules out versus how much revenue we received during that time period. So as we get that done, we'd be happy to provide that to the committee.
Thank you.
Representative Wohl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In 2001 or two, it looks like passenger numbers started declining. Well, they started back in 98, it looks like. Steady decline till 05 or 06. But your operating weeks went up starting in 02. So you have a divergence there. It's sort of counterintuitive to what you're experiencing now. Do you have an explanation for that?
Through the chair, Representative Wohl, there definitely was a little bit of divergence there, and we kind of saw the same thing. Looking at 05, 06, 07, we had our operating weeks took a fairly big jump up, from close to 300 operating weeks in 2004 up to over 400. I think we had 429 weeks in 2007. So there's about a close to a 40% increase in operating weeks, but the ridership, the passenger ridership, even though it went up, it only went up by roughly 18%. So we didn't see the same correlation with just adding more service. We didn't see the same proportionate increase in ridership. So what that kind of told us there, which kind of goes back to what you had in 2000-2001, the ridership came down, and it wasn't as directly correlated with the operating weeks there. So what it really told us is more service didn't necessarily equate to more demand or more ridership. It just kind of spread it out a little bit in those years. So what we're trying to do now is as we talked about with our cost recovery back on slide 3, we're trying to more closely match and really be most efficient we can with the ships we've got to operate and be able to meet that demand and keep those revenues maximized with the service we can provide.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And through the chair, the decline in operating weeks in the last couple of years, 2020, and you mentioned the strike and the pandemic in 2020. I assume you're gonna have that red line move up a little bit. And what's your target operating weeks going forward? And also, how much of that decline was due to just ships breaking down, not COVID or strikes, but just equipment malfunction? And will you overcome that? And what's your target operating weeks going forward? We're down at 200, and just a couple of years ago, we're in, you know, over 300. So where's the optimum? Where's the sweet spot there? And I guess back to my first question, I understand you increased your operating weeks and traffic ridership didn't go up that much, but there was a couple of years where you increased it and ridership went down, which seems highly strange. But I guess back to my first question, my most recent one, what's your operating week target and how much of that downtime is due to equipment malfunction?
Through the chair, Representative Wool, I don't have the operating weeks as far as equipment malfunction for the past year, but we can pull that and see how many weeks were lost there. We had in the FY21 budget, I'll go back and pull my other sheet. For the FY21 authorized budget, we had 286.7 operating weeks in that authorized budget. We actually ran or plan to run this fiscal year 204.5, but that's due to the decrease in revenue. So we've had to reduce our operating weeks back to 204.5. But going forward, the FY22 governor's budget provides for 241.9 operating weeks in the governor's proposed budget.
Is that a long-term goal? I understand the 1 year, but like looking ahead, you know, 5-10 years, which I imagine you guys are doing, what kind of trend in operating weeks are you looking at? Because it's done a serious decline over the last, you know, 10 years, and serious, you know, what's your goal and a long-term stabilized predictable operating week schedule?
Through the chair, Representative Wool, we will get to in a few slides another scenario that we'll look at as far as a different cost structure. But what we've looked at with in another presentation we had with just a hypothetical scenario, we looked at 240 to 280 operating weeks as kind of the ideal sweet spot right now with the shifts we've got available to run. But we will address more another scenario in a few slides to come.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
For the record, Representative Carpenter joined us earlier. I think that takes us on to slide 7.
Okay, so slide 7 here, we just wanted to look at a little bit of historical demand or capacity utilization. Our vehicle utilization has been, in the yellow there, it's been roughly around, you know, 60 to 65%. It's dropped a little bit in 2018, 2019, as well as our passenger utilization is roughly about a third, but that has decreased a little bit in the last couple of years as well. So this mainly we just wanted to look at demand compared to the routes we're running those years, the ships we have running those years, and see what that did to our how full are the ships running around.
I don't see any questions. Please proceed.
Okay, so I will point out that utilization slide 2 does have, that's system-wide. That's not necessarily certain routes. Of course, certain routes are more full than others, but that is system-wide. But moving on to slide 8, I will turn it back to Deputy Commissioner Carpenter.
Thanks, Matt. Okay, so slide 8, we're diving into the budget here. Again, it's kind of a recap, a little bit of a more recent year's look. Got a bar chart here. The big blue bars being the state funds that are appropriated to the system, and the gray being the revenues of the system on top of that. And then you'll see that green slice is our utilization of the CARES Act. What we've done here is on the columns to the farther side of the far right side, we've taken the 20 authorized versus the 20 actuals and the 21 authorized versus what we're expecting in 21, and to show kind of the impact of COVID. You know, in FY20, you'll see the 20 authorized, we expected $55 million. That was what we had budgeted for revenue in our budget, and we actually realized $28 million. And again, in FY21, we had budgeted about $52 million and are expecting to finish the year at about $24 million, with the total of between the 2 years, as we've been saying, a roughly a $45 million revenue impact to the system. And then our far right column there, you'll see the governor's proposed budget, which is at $55 million state funds and then $47 million of projected revenue, which we're hoping for anyway. Any questions on that slide?
I don't see any questions.
Okay, slide 9. This was the Senate Finance Committee and the House Finance Subcommittee asked us to provide an alternate scenario of additional funding to the system over what the governor's budget included and what the impacts would be. What we've done here is shown the 20 authorized, again, the 21 authorized, and we've added weeks of service on top, first line, and then the port calls that are going to be made in each of these budgets. So you can see how it was in FY20, 21, and then the 21 or the FY22 proposed budget by the governor. So for an example, what we expected to provide in FY21 was 4,900 port calls. Of course, we're nowhere near that. And then the governor's budget is basically projecting 4,175 port calls. And then this new scenario we'll talk about is on the far right. It's called Scenario A. It's basically adding, if you look at the very bottom, it's adding $7.3 million, which is a combination of $4.39 million of UGF, unrestricted general funds, with an associated $2.96 million increase in revenue, for the total increase of $7.355. What that does is, as you see up top, it increases the port calls from 4,175 to 4,910. Which is more in line with what the FY21 budget was expected to be. And then it brings the weeks of service back up to the 274.9. And again, fare box recovery in that 45% range. The benefits of this additional money are, as we were asked, what would, if we were given more money, how we would utilize it. And I think we would, as Matt can explain a little bit more, that increasing our winter service, even though it might seem counterintuitive in that there's not the demand there, it allows us to retain our crew better, because it's right now we're almost running a seasonal fleet and losing a lot of our crew in the winter, which is hard for retention. And this would allow us to run more routes in the winter, less service gaps, hopefully maintain our crew year round. So Matt will go into exactly what this adds to operating weeks and which ports here in the subsequent slides, unless there's questions on this slide.
Representative LeBon, then Wolf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess looking at the prior slide and seeing that there were monies from the CARES Act, and then in the fiscal year 2022 governor proposed budget, there's no allocation of any CARES Act money. Is it because we're not anticipating any CARES Act money or any COVID related monies at all? Would you have an answer to that question?
Sure thing. Through the chair, Representative LeBon. When our 22 gov budget was put out, it was prior to the CRISA Act. We had pretty much utilized all the CARES Act funding that was available. This CARES Act funding was from the FTA, Federal Transit Administration. The CRISA Act, of course, has $55 million from the Federal Transit Administration, which could be utilized for Marine Highway. Again, this was our budget at the time, December 15th, So you won't see it in this scenario here.
Representative Wool.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The motor fuel tax number, which stays unchanged, in all those columns. Can you explain what the source of that is?
Through the chair, Representative Wool, are we back on slide 8 still? I think so, yeah.
We're 9. No, no, 9. There you go.
9. Sorry. Oh, yeah. Thank you. So the source of that funding is our standard motor fuel tax that is in place. We have a marine component as well as the highway component. I'm not saying, I don't believe this is entirely the marine component, but in my former job at Ledge Finance, I recall distributing the motor fuel tax into the DOT budget, and we kind of did it on a, I think it was on a weighted basis. I could be mistaken here, actually, but there was a reason and why we distributed this $3.6 million into Marine Highway. I thought it was some kind of a weighted basis with the GF we have throughout our whole agency. That's just the amount that's been allocated in each of these budgets, and it hasn't gone up or down with the volatility of the motor fuel tax.
Thank you. I was just wondering, is it dependent on the amount of motor fuel tax the state takes in? Because I know in past budgets, you've fallen short of what your projections are due to less people driving, less people buying gas, better car fuel efficiency. And also, if, for example, a motor fuel tax increase were to pass, which came fairly close last year, which would go from 8 cents to 16 cents, would that number automatically double, or do you have a number for that? And one last sort of obvious question, but I'm not in the marine business, but a port call, is that the total cumulative stops at ports from all your ships in a year?
Through the chair, great questions. So when we incurred a shortfall of motor fuel tax, we had to examine our agency-wide where we could restrict funding or where it was the least impactful, I guess. And that's a whole story of where we closed the Silver Stip Maintenance Station a few years ago, and now it reopened it. The shortfall, we had to absorb it within our agency at some point, somewhere. If a motor fuel tax increase was to pass the legislature and be signed into law, that would provide the legislature and the general fund, a doubling of that revenue source, at which it's up to the legislature how they would like to appropriate that money to our agency or any other agency for that matter. It could certainly supplant, complement, or any, however that money wanted to be put by the legislature in our budget. And then finally, on the port calls, you are correct. So that would be the total number of visits a ship went to a community in a year. So, the cumulative number of times it went to Bellingham, Juneau, Sitka, et cetera.
Of all your ships combined?
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, Mr. Carpenter, the returning to page 6, the CARES Act, or page 8 rather, the CARES Act line, FY 2021 projected federal CARES dollars, $3,500,000. There were like 5 congressional acts, but 3 have been really significant, I guess. One was in March of last year. The second was in December, just 3 months ago. Was there anything in the December Act that could supplement the $3,500,000?
Through the chair, Representative Jefferson, absolutely. A lot of it actually, the CRISA money included the over $100 million from the Federal Highway Administration that had it was primarily eligible for Title 23 capital projects. It also had that special authority provision for operating purposes, and I believe Dom's going to do a whole presentation on that following this presentation that'll get quite detailed. And in addition to that, there was the $55 million from the Federal Transit Administration, this 5311 money, we call it. And that's the same flavor that you see of this green bar, or these green bars here. It's for transit organizations, of which there are roughly 13 in the state that are eligible, plus the Marine Highway System.
Okay. And if I might follow up, and I apologize for asking something so elementary that I could do offline, but the committee may be benefited. Of that $100 million CURSA money and 53 federal transit money, broadly speaking, what is the administration recommending we do with that money? In its budgets, in its current budget, supplemental capital operating.
Sure. Through the chair, Representative Josephson, we actually haven't put a proposal forward. We've been working with OMB on ironing out the details of the CRISA funding. I know there was some guidance from the Federal Highway Administration on their preferred alternatives were the Fed Highway towards their standard Title 23 eligible projects, but it did provide that provision for operating purposes related to highways. And then the FTA funding, as we said, there's a lot of demand for it through across multiple grantees, and it's just a matter of determining the best path forward.
So that bill, the last bill passed December 27th, I remember that. That's after the governor produced his bills, but before his amended bills. Do his amended bills tell us anything about the administration's specific positions on these funds?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, not at this time. Again, we were waiting guidance. Even though the bills passed, we needed firm guidance from the Federal Highway Administration, and we have received that. I don't remember what day, or it was a couple weeks ago, several weeks ago. And again, we've been working with OMB to try to come up with a solution or a proposal. It's not out yet is all I can say to that.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, please continue.
Okay, thank you. We've covered slide 9. Slide 10 is getting into the operating plan, and I'll ask Matt McLaren to take over.
Mr. McLaren, is your video, does that work?
I will see. Okay.
Oh, great.
Is it on now?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so on to slide 10, for the record, again, Matt McLaren, business manager for the Marine Highway System. So what we're looking at here is the operating plan, or a proposed operating plan, or the governor's proposed budget. So the biggest thing, our summer schedule, as we start to look at this operating plan and the scenario A that we had drafted up, one big difference, there's really three vessels to focus on here. One is the Kennecott up there, and looking from mid-October through mid-January before she goes into overhaul. You can see we've got on there the Cross Gulf, Prince William Sound, and South Central schedule there. And that gets back to what we were doing this past winter with the Kennecott, which essentially was operating Bellingham through Southeast Alaska all the way up to Whittier, and then operating to Prince William Sound, Cordova Valdez up there, and then over to Homer and Kodiak as well. And that was on a two-week round-trip cycle. So essentially that ship was covering most of the entire system, which is what we would look at doing with this operating plan next year for those months, which is good in a way. It's not as costly, but there's some risk there, of course. If we get a mechanical failure, that's one ship that breaks down, and it affects all the way from Bellingham, Southeast, Prince William Sound, Homer, Kodiak. It's all impacted throughout all those areas of the state if we're out of that ship for any amount of time. Or if we run into weather that we can't cross the Gulf during that time, it creates a little problem there. But so then we've also got the Matanuska running Bellingham in the winter, which would help a little bit there too. So on the next slide, I'll move into some of the differences. We'll look at the difference of this plan and then scenario A that we came up with. But before we move, any questions before we move on?
Ms. Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Looking at the operating plan slide, Mr. McLaren, noticing that the Aurora is a part of that plan as we move forward. What's the current status of the Aurora right now? Is it operating within the system? Is it in layup? Is it an overhaul? What's its situation? Can you tell me?
Sure. Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, the Aurora is finishing up the overhaul. We had a lot of steel work to do over this past winter. She is finishing up her overhaul, and she's scheduled to return to service April 15th up in Prince William Sound.
So it says here in the operating plan it's supposed to begin March 10th. So that's of this current year, correct? So it's already behind schedule in meeting the operating plan at this point. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, this will be next fiscal year, so not the current fiscal year.
Okay, got it. Thank you very much.
Okay, next slide.
Okay, so moving on to slide 11, we've highlighted some differences here. And again, three ships really to look at the differences and the impacts is the Kennecott. We'll start there since that's top and that's where we're at. So the Kennecott would be able to continue on the Cross Gulf run. It would still run Bellingham up to Whittier. But the biggest difference is she would not have to also cover Prince William Sound. And she would not have to cover the Homer Kodiak area during that time. So what that does, it frees up some time for the Kennecott in to run a little bit more in southeast Alaska. This past winter, we weren't able to get in the schedule and meet tides and currents and all the issues to be able to get the Kennecott to stop in Wrangell. There were some other ports in southeast that really were impacted by less service because we weren't able to provide as much, but that was primarily due to the revenue. It wasn't a budget authority thing. It was just our low revenue and low cash, so we had to reduce services there. But the other thing this does, it adds the Aurora, gets rid of the Aurora layup period from mid-October to mid-January, so the Aurora would be able to keep operating during that time in Prince William Sound and provide more service up there. The Tustamina would also be able to keep operating from November through the end of March, and that would provide more service in the Homer Kodiak area and those communities where the Tustamina could service. So it does add more operating weeks. It bumps it up to 274.9 weeks, decreases some of the service gaps, increases service frequency through all regions of the state. So that pretty well covers this. Any questions on this plan?
Representative Wool.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It looks like the Aurora, is that Prince William Sound, the Valdez, Whittier, Cordova area? And is that service going to be fairly consistent even in the winter months? I mean, not necessarily the same schedule, but I know there were some issues with that last year.
Through the chair, Representative Wool, that is correct. This past winter, we didn't have the Aurora in service because she was getting the steel work done. So, yes, it does cover Whittier, Cordova, Valdez, those ports in Prince William Sound. So with the Aurora able to run, Prince William Sound doesn't have to wait for every other week for the Kennecott to show up to be able to service. The Aurora would be dedicated to Prince William Sound and keep that service running all winter, except for the time during her overhaul period.
Thank you.
Okay, please proceed.
Okay, so no other questions here. I'll turn it back to Deputy Commissioner Carpenter to get into a little more of the numbers.
Great, thanks, Matt. Rob Carpenter, DOT. Oh, this is a lot of numbers, not going to lie, and I probably won't address many of them. What we're trying to show here is a little historical of our, it's kind of a cash flow sources and uses, a little bit of a, I guess, an income statement, if you will. The top portion being our revenues, our state-funded, UGF base, our unrestricted general fund, et cetera. And then down below, how we utilize the funding into vessel ops, fuel, shoreside, et cetera. And then down near the bottom is really what I want you guys to focus on. is that you can see we're ending, projected to end FY21 with around a $6.6 million deficit. I think that's been well broadcast. We did reduce our 21 operations plan, but we still, again, have this deficit we're projecting, and looking to figure out a plan with the legislature and working with OMB on, again, best path forward and a proposal for you to consider.
Got a question, Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We go back up to UGF appropriations, starting in FY15, $107 million, and then you can see it drops off as low as $45 million. If you go back even further than that, let's say FY14, 13, does that GF figure even go higher than the $107
million? Through the chair, Representative Ortiz. It does. If we could, if we'll look back on slide three. Remember this one. So the dark blue lines represent the state funding, which is mostly unrestricted general funds, and it peaked in that 2014-2015 time period for the amount of money, the state funding going towards the system.
So while all of DOT is certainly, and all the agencies have certainly received significant cutbacks, is it safe to say that AMHS portion of DOT has received in UGF support a reduction from FY13 or so of at least 60%? Is that a fair assumption?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, I believe, I don't know the ratio or the percentage right now. I think Matt's saying it was $123 million in FY13, and now we're looking at $50 million, so definitely a 60%-ish decline is what you're seeing.
Thank you.
Please continue.
Okay, slide 12 continues with same kind of historical figures, except now we're looking at our Marine Highway System fund balance. As you can see here, we have a beginning of year balance, deposits, supplemental deposits, withdrawals, et cetera. You get an end of the year balance, and then we have what's called our capitalization account, which is a small amount of money left over from the fuel trigger days back in the high low prices. But bottom line number there is our total fund balance, which you can see was in the 20 to 30 millions typically. And that it's in FY20, it dropped down to 8.5 and now is projected to be zero because we have that operations deficit. You can see that the withdrawals line in FY20, the amount of money we absorbed from the fund to fill the deficits, deficits, the amount of revenue shortfall. So I guess the takeaway here is typically there's a fund balance for us to manage cash flow, et cetera, for the system that we don't have right now. And I think we generally strive for around 10% of our budget as a comfortable. So at $100 million, we would need $10 million, for example.
Representative Josephson.
So I guess through the chair, Mr. Carpenter, one thing I'm trying to figure out is whether the correlation is the more ships are on the water, the more the percent of cost recovery curve improves, or is the opposite true, that it just gets more and more costly. And then the policy call becomes, notwithstanding the fact that it's, and we know that it's not self-sustaining, what is its value to coastal Alaska? And I guess I'm looking back at page three. Representative Rasmussen talked about this as well. It shows this huge decline in revenue in 2006 and 2007. You cited steepening oil prices. That makes a lot of sense to me. But then in the late aughts and early teens, when the state still had a lot of revenue, the ridership, I assume cost of recovery is linked to ridership, although we didn't increase rates maybe at that time. Maybe we hadn't started to really jack up the rates. But this yellow or gold line doesn't come back up. Can you explain that?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, I mean, astute observations. And, you know, on slide three, that fare box recovery decline, again, is, you know, the revenues stayed fairly flat, the salmon color, but our UGF budget was increased so much that the ratio of our revenue total budget dropped significantly, right? So, and then you can see it even further in the 20 and 21, as our revenues plummeted, the ratio went down with it. But, and then in the 22 Gov, we're trying to get back to this 50%, you know, 50-50, if you will, 50% revenue, 50% state funding. And that was kind of the goal for the 20 and 21 budget as well that the legislature passed. And your point's valid, is where's the spot where, you know, are we providing more service? Does it increase ridership? Or what do you need to provide the basic amount of service to all communities, even though the demand isn't necessarily there because there's a low population? And that's a challenging question we're trying to answer ourselves, but we're feeling like this level in the $100 million range where the 22 governor budget is, or even where the scenario A is kind of a spot where we can meet demand, provide service to all ports to some level that's acceptable and hopefully reliable, and we can continue that on a consistent basis into the future. It seems like it's sustainable budget-wise to a degree, and that it will hopefully utilize more capacity within the ships if people have an idea of a consistent, ongoing, reliable schedule. That's kind of what we're trying to do, I think, right now. Less ships, because we, you know, that the more ships we have running is higher costs. So less ships, and then again, try to improve utilization and keep that 50-50 ratio.
I guess my last question through the chair, follow up. The same page here, our slide, are those higher UGF years, do those reflect all costs so that the system is paying for the fast ferries? Is that part of the explanation there? And that now we've reverted to the older vessels again, so it's sort of a return to normal. Is that part of what's going on there?
Chair, Representative Jefferson, that's correct, partially, for sure. That you'll see the note down below where we added Fairweather and Chenega in 2004, 2007. And not only added those vessels, but we also added a lot more port calls, a lot more service weeks. This was, the state was doing very well, and we had a lot of UGF revenue, and the appetite from the legislature was to appropriate more money to the system. And, you know, we provided that service, I think, with all our ships running all the time. We didn't necessarily, as Matt said, ridership didn't increase necessarily, more spread out, which is kind of, you know, instead of utilizing more space on our ships, with less frequency, we were just spreading the demand out more.
Thank you.
Okay, please continue.
All right, slide 14. This is just kind of a recap. It's our last slide. It's just showing a little recap of the weeks of service, the ports of call. And one little adjustment we've done here is removed Metlakatla from the calculations. That's our one day boat run that's fairly consistent, and there was some people that, or there was some interest in seeing, you know, what would our weeks of service be, or our port call less those Metlakatla runs. And as you can see in the, for example, in the 22 governor to the far right, our weeks of service would drop from 241 to 192. So that's the weeks of service for the rest of the system throughout Alaska. And likewise, the ports of call would drop from 4,175 to 3,675. So 3,675 ports of call throughout the rest of the system, excluding Metlakatla.
Okay, Representative Wool.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I just answered my own question, but Metlakatla is a boat, or is it a place? Because if you you go from 241 to 192, that's
that's actually, I'm sorry, through the chair, well, that's the actual town of Metlakatla, which is near Ketchikan. It's the day boat that Latuya runs every day.
Follow-up. Thank you. I'm not as intimately familiar with the different routes, but if that's the little back-and-forth ferry, so if you take that out, it adjusts your numbers for the more common types of routes, which... it's not that you're suggesting not having it. You're just saying the numbers get skewed. And so if you go from 241 to 192 weeks of service, on your other graph, that's a big dive. Does the other graph and all the other – does it include Metlakatla and all those other points, data points? I imagine it does. So, I mean, that's a big difference.
Through the chair, Representative Wool, the other graphs do include the Metlakatla run. And again, this was just someone was just interested in seeing, like you're saying, it's one of our, it's a little bit different than the rest of the routes in the system. And so it was like, let's exclude that and see what that looks like. But you're right, our historical graphs include Metlakatla, at least since we've been running that route with the Latuya.
Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just as an added note, the Metlakatla run does quite well in comparison to other runs in relationship to farebox recovery. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, you are correct. I don't, Matt can speak to that more. I don't know if she pays for herself or not.
Sure. Again, Matt McLaren, Business Manager, Marine Highway System. Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, that is correct. That is one of the few runs that does pay for itself throughout the year, yes.
Okay, I don't see any further questions, so I think that wraps up this presentation. Is that correct, Mr. Carpenter? Okay, well.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Let's jump over to the next presentation, and that is the Corona Aid Relief and Economic Security Act and CRISA presentation from, I believe, Dom Pannon. Are you going to be doing this one? And if so, is your video also work? Great, thanks. Okay, thanks for joining us. And if you could put yourself on the record.
For the record, Dom Pannon, Admin Services Director for Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. And so today we'll be walking through the Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act, the CARES Act, and the Coronavirus Response and Relief Supplemental Appropriation Act, CRISA. So going to slide two. So this slide just demonstrates the universe of funds we'll be talking about today. Basically, the two acts that were mentioned earlier, the CARES Act and the CRISA Act, or CERSA Act, depending on how you want to say it. The CARES Act was enacted March 27th of 2020, the CRISA Act enacted December 27th of 2020. Each of those federal acts or federal dollars had three flavors of funding, or three different federal partners that we had to work with. Each of those funds had its own requirements, uses, and guidance. We'll be going over all of those here We can move to the next slide. So in going through the funds that were on the previous slide, the way the presentation is structured is to go over of all those funds, what has been authorized, what we have authorization for, and what we're using it for. Then we'll go into what we're proposing to use in the 2022 budget so far. And then we'll go into what's available. As Rob said earlier, there are funds that have not had a plan put forward. After we go over the available funds, we'll talk about what the funds can be used for, and then the time frame in which the state would be required to use those funds. Go to slide 4. So this slide breaks out by fiscal year vertically and by the fund type horizontally. The funds that we received authorization for to date, and all of those funds have been received initially through an RPL request. So initially the CARES Act, the FAA CARES funds, and the FTA CARES funds were received through an RPL early in 2020, and the CRISA funds for the FHWA CRISA funds received through an RPL as well. So this is a breakout of what we've used the funds for, and who received those funds by year and by fund type. Okay, we'll move to the next slide, slide 5. So in the proposed fiscal year 2022 budget, the department's proposing to use $17 million of FAA CARES funds and $2.7 million of FHWA CRISA funds. The Federal Aviation, we'll go over what we're using those for on the next slide here. So slide 6. So in the 22 proposals, the $1.2 million of FHWA CRISA, we're requesting those funds to continue a two-week on, two-week off Dalton District shift for our maintenance operators there at the remote camps. That's something we started at the beginning of the pandemic to mitigate COVID, to not have insufficient personnel to keep the highway open. There's been a number of benefits to that, increased morale. There is an increase in overtime that equates to an increase in pay for those operators. But we want to continue doing that mitigation and keep that shift. There's an increased level of service. So we're proposing to use the CRISA funds for $1.2 million from FHWA there. The next top row, the center square, is $620,000 of FHWA CRISA funds to continue the first year of operating the Silvertip Maintenance Station. We're reopening that this year with the RPL, and this is the request for the operating funds for fiscal year 2022. So same with the next square, the top right square, $794,000 of FHWA CRISA funds. That's for our Northern Region Maintenance Stations. That's the first year of operating costs for those as well for fiscal year 2022. The bottom left, so we have a shortfall between what Department of Revenue is projecting our aviation fuel receipts will be versus what we have budgeted. And the FAA CARES funds would be an appropriate fund source for us to swap out those funds or fiscal year 2022 to not have to take a budget cut with that shortfall. The bottom left square, the bottom center square, we're proposing to replace UGF with FAA CARES funds for a one-time swap of $14.6 million. That's simply because these federal funds are available to use for airport operations and could replace the UGF subsidy that our rural airport system receives to help the state out in its financial situation. The last bottom right is we're proposing, this is a budget increase of $2.3 million of FAA CARES. The FAA has determined that rural airport paint striping is not an eligible capital expense on a yearly basis, which it traditionally has been. And they've determined that that is only an eligible expense every 3 years. So as Alaska plows its runways and picks up the paint, and a lot of our runways need to be painted on an annual basis, so we have to move that capital expense to our operating budget in order to keep those airports painted and in compliance with the FAA. Slide 7. So this this slide shows all of the funds that have not, the outstanding amounts that we would either seek authority for in future years or are still assembling the plan, a proposal, and would need further appropriation. I'll draw your attention first to the Alaska Rural Airport system, the FAA CARES funds, the $11 million. The current plan for that is to continue to supplant the UGF in our rural airport system into fiscal year 2023, to continue relieving the amount of UGF required to run that program with appropriately available funds. Under the, in the next column, the $26.8 million, we're also proposing to use that money. This $26.8 million could be mixed and matched with the FAA CARES funds in fiscal year 2022 to preserve CARES funds, but largely there's $26.8 million of further FAA CRISA funds for the rural airport system. And then the last note here is on the FHWA CRISA funds, the $11.2 million, just wanted to note that that's simply pass-through funding and it goes to the Anchorage area, their organization, their transportation organization. So $11 million of CARES available, FAA CRISA, $44.3 million, FHWA CRISA, $119 million, and the FTA CRISA has $55.7 million available and needing appropriation. Go to the next slide.
We've got two questions, Representative Wool and then Josephson. Or I'm sorry, actually, let's go with Representative Johnson and then Wool and Josephson.
After you, ma'am.
Thank you. I actually would defer to my committee members. I have I have a question about the upcoming ARPA funding. So if they want to talk about this, it's on the slide, I would defer.
Okay, Representative Wool.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, I just, you mentioned FAA money for the Anchorage area. It's come up in previous meetings about Merrill Field, and they seem to get a pretty generous amount of federal funding. Is that included in this? Are they also included in this $11.294 million?
Through the chair, I believe it was Representative Wool. The $11.294 million there is from the Federal Highway Administration, FHWA CRISA funds. And that is for the, I'm forgetting the acronym, but the Metropolitan Planning Organization in Anchorage for their roads and highways. Regarding the FAA CARES funds that went out earlier in the year, that was methodology and a formula that was developed by the FAA by the federal government, and there was a portion allocated to Merrill Field. but not owning Merrill Field and not having any role in its operations, we had no part in how much they got. I can say that debt service payments were a part of how much an airport got. So if an airport had significant debt service payments, that was part of the formula of how much relief they got.
Thank you.
Representative Josephson?
Yes, through the chair, if I look at page 2 and I add $224 million to the proposed GEO bond of $350 million, that gets me to $575 million. And then we've been, in recent years, appropriating $150 million. Perhaps we wouldn't need to do all that. I know the governor's proposal is not to do all that. Am I right about my numbers here, that in total we'd be getting up in excess of potentially $500 million? And that's before the American Rescue Plan dollars that were passed 2 weeks ago, which may or may not have capital implications. Do I have that about right?
Through the chair, Representative, I'm sorry, it was kind of hard to hear the question, but as we'll get into on the next couple of slides, some of these funds can be used for operating expenses, and some are solely meant for operating expenses.
Let me try it again. The slide 2 shows $225 million. The GEO bond that's proposed is $350 million. That's that'd be $575 million. And then there's typically some other match that we have to come up with. The governor's is less than $100 million, but we'd be approaching, in this entire package with the GEO bond, $700 million. Is my math right in terms of what's being proposed by the administration?
Through the chair, Representative, a significant portion of the CRISA funds, that there has not been a proposal put forward for those funds at this time.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Johnson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and through the chair. And this may be more appropriate as you get further into discussion of the various funds, but I'm looking forward at the ARPA funds, and those are just passed. So they're supposed to be distributed on the 10th of May, the first tranche. I guess what would like you to address as you go through these slides, I recognize it's somewhat speculative, even though it looks like there's about $30 billion available for local transportation in that act. That it does look to me like that would be something that will be applicable in this coming year's budget in the 2022. It will be coming online during this coming year. And if you could address anything that you know about that and when that might be available, I would appreciate hearing anything you can add as you go through these other funds. Thank you.
I don't see any further questions. Mr. Pinon?
Okay. I believe we're on slide 8. So looking at the CARES fund, the CARES funds, the first kind of money we received was from the Federal Transit Administration, and that was for operating expenses. Any expense necessary to keep a transportation system for a non-urbanized area operational during the pandemic, as well as administrative leave due to reductions in service. The 5311 there, I believe there's 12 non-urbanized transportation agencies, as well as the Alaska Marine Highway System also qualifies for a total of 13. The Federal Aviation Administration CARES funds were for any purpose of which airport revenue could be lawfully used, and that is governed by the federal law largely. We were also able to use those funds for capital if we chose, but the guidance from the FAA for CARES funds was to use it for operating purposes. So those funds were also the FAA also allowed us to pool all the funds for all the airports that we received an allocation for. As Alaska is a single airport sponsor, all of our airports netted us an allocation for each of those airports. We did not have to spend CARES funds at any specific airport. It was at our discretion as to which airport we spent those on. The CRF is the COVID relief fund, and that was the Section 5001D, the guaranteed minimum that states got for unbudgeted expenses that they incurred because of COVID. So we did receive some of that for personal protective equipment and testing for AMHS. We can move to slide 9. This is the most recent, well, this is the December CRISA Act. The FTA funds here are, again, eligible for all operating expenses for 5311 recipients, including the Alaska Marine Highway System. These funds are can be used for responding to COVID, operating a system, and as well as administrative leave. The FAA funds in the CRISA Act were allocated differently from the FAA funds in the CARES Act. These funds were allocated directly to an airport and do have to be used at specific airports. They also cannot be converted to capital. They can only be used for an operating expense at those airports. And one of the caveats with those funds is that some of the allocations on to individual airports is more money than we would spend in a year at that airport, or even over multiple years. So we're working on a plan on how to best use that money. The last here is the Federal Highway Administration CRISA funds. And the intent here is that these funds really have three intended purposes. So the first is for Title 23 eligible activities to augment a state's surface transportation capital program. By using these funds for capital, these funds would resemble our most flexible type of federal funding, our surface transportation block grants, and they could be used on any of our transportation improvement plan projects. These funds can also be transferred to a public tolling agency or a ferry system at the state's discretion, which those funds could then be used for operations within that entity. These funds can also be used for routine maintenance, whereas in the past, FHWA has never allowed for their funds to be used for operations and maintenance. And again, that's why we're using them to open up the maintenance stations. They're also available for debt service payments and advanced construction. So we can move to slide 10 if there's no questions.
Representative Wolf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Regarding the maintenance stations, I truly appreciate they're going to be open again using this funds. Does that mean there's a timeline and that you'll have to figure out how to fund them after this fund runs out?
Through the chair, Representative Wolf, that's correct. Right now, they're funded with the federal CRISA funds, and we're requesting an appropriation in fiscal year 2022. From the executive branch side, we've marked these all as one-time items, so they will need addressing in the future if nothing else is available. If the federal dollars are no longer available, we would request UGF or potentially motor fuel tax, but yes, we would request a replacement funding to continue operating those.
Thank you.
Okay, please continue.
Okay, Moving to slide 10. So this is a timeline of when the funds kind of came available to us and when we have to spend them by. So the FTA expenses from the CARES Act can be available, are available until expended. The FAA expenses from the CARES, we only have those for 4 years. The FAA has a budget window or a period of performance of 4 years. So any available FAA CARES funds need to be spent before April 29th, 2024. The COVID relief funds, that's on there because we did spend some of those. We don't have any more available, but the CRISA Act extended the expenditure time on that fund until the end of fiscal year 2021.
Representative Joseph. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. He answered that. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Panon.
Thank you. The CRISA funds, again, with the FTA, with that federal partner, they're available until expended. That's the approximately $55 million. The FAA funds in CRISA, again, we don't have any authority yet and we'll need to sign those grant agreements once authority's been enacted. It'll be available for 4 years from that point in time. The FHWA funds can be, we can obligate that federally or set up a federal project and obligate those federal funds out until September 30th, 2024. And then after that, we can continue to expend that money out until fiscal year 2030. It's kind of an indicator that the FHWA perhaps envisioned those funds being available for surface transportation projects, given the long timeline there that matches up with the surface transportation projects. However, it does have the other uses as outlined.
Representative LeBon and then Josephson.
Oh. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm looking at, sorry to go backwards here, but slide 7. The Alaska International Airport System, I assume that's Fairbanks International Airport and Ted Stevens International Airport.
Through the chair, I believe it is Representative LeBon. That is correct. Yes.
And how is that money divided between the two airports?
Through the chair, great question. So both of those airports use money from a single account, and that's the International Airport Revenue Fund. So they both draw from the same checking account and are both considered part of the same individual system. So it's likely that that money would go into that account and be used for potentially debt service payments at Anchorage International or other operating expenses out of the IRF.
And if I could follow up, Mr. Chair, so how much control does the state have in allocation of those monies from CARISA or from the CARES? I mean, there's two pools of money. Do we have a lot of flexibility, and are they similar and how the formula is applied to both CARES and CARISA funding sources, or is it all just something to figure out later?
Through the chair, Representative, good question. On slide 7, I'll move from left to right here. The $11,059.8 million of FAA CARES funds, that can be used at the rural airport system, at any rural airport. It could be used to replace UGF, or it could be used for capital projects on the rural airport system at any airport. Moving to the second column, the FAA CRISA, the first item there, the $17.5 million, that's really locked into the international airport system, which both share an individual fund. There's not a lot other than appropriation for that fund to receive that money. That'll just likely be operating expenses at the internationals, and it has to be operating expenses. Going down again on the FAA CRISA, the rural airport system, these funds are locked into specific airports. They're allocated by rural airport, and these are the hub airports. There's approximately just over 20 airports that this is allocated to. It has to be spent on operating at those airports. So it can be used to replace UGF or to increase increase the amount spent at airports. But the last two columns here is where there is a significant amount of flexibility in decisions to be made. The FHWA CRISA funds, the $108 million there, that can be used for, again, surface transportation capital. So transportation capital projects, it can be used for routine maintenance on a public road. It can be transferred to a tolling agency or a ferry system that provides a public benefit. So there's a number of a significant combination of that. The $11 million underneath, that has to go. That'll be pass-through funding to Anchorage metropolitan area transportation. And then the FTA money, that can go to any 5311 eligible transportation agency. The ferry system is one of those. There's 12 others throughout the state that typically receive an annual subsidy from FTA. But that's for operating costs, any operating costs if you're a 5311 transportation agency.
Representative Josephson?
Yeah, through the chair, am I right, based on the services that DOT provides, with the exception of lost tax revenue at the airports, there can't be, it seems like the department can be and receives, you've indicated there's some guidance and restrictions, but it's hard to talk about COVID's influence on a highway because it's a highway. Am I right about that? Compared to, for example, the Department of Education, the Department of Health and Social Services, that broadly speaking, these funds and your agency can be more, I hate to use the word, but freewheeling about how we spend these monies.
Through the chair, Representative Josephson. So that's correct. The funds that the Department of Transportation received were not necessarily tied to COVID impacts, but were far more flexible, as you say, and were more tied to secondary impacts of the pandemic. So, for example, motor fuel tax, we had a $3.5 million shortfall in 20 and a $3.3 million shortfall in 21. We were able to use CARES funds to offset that and not decrease our service because of the motor fuel tax shortfall. But certainly, these funds are not tied specifically to addressing COVID, but more the effects of the pandemic.
Thank you.
Okay, I don't see any further questions. Mr. Pannon?
Okay, if we can move back to slide 9, I just wanted to point out that we've provided underneath the headers here of each federal agency when we received the guidance to help give a timeline of when we were able to start formulating the plan. It's you can see on the FTA funds, we received guidance in January, but then got an update a couple months later. It's very complex. I wanted to make that point. And then to address the earlier comment about the ARPA, or the most recent act. In that act, there is not a significant amount of funding coming to us from the FTA, so that's the 5311. It's about $3 million of FTA funds coming to us, whereas we just received $55 million. So it's far less in this recent ARP Act. And there's no FHWA funds in there, I believe. There are some airport funds in there, and we're tracking that. We're continually tracking that, but don't have information on what Alaska would get at this time.
Okay.
And, yep, so that's our presentation today, and thank you for allowing us to speak to this.
Great. I don't see any Representative Wool.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Some really obtuse question, but figured now's the time. These CARES and CRISA and soon to be ARPA money. We talked about yesterday one of the boats is needs a cleaning, about $1 million. I'm assuming funds could be found in all these three pots of money for cleaning the boat. I forget which boat it was. One of the ferries needed Testamina. I mean,
it's the Mal, I think.
Well, anyhow, Malaspina. We need to clean it in order to sell it. I know it's a bizarre question. I just thought that.
Actually, you need to clean it to scuttle it.
To scuttle it, clean it to scuttle it. I just like using the word scuttle in a meeting, but anyhow, it seems like some of these funds could be used for, it's not. I don't know if that's a capital or maintenance or just COVID cleaning, but.
Was that a question for Mr. Pannon or just a comment?
Not really.
Okay.
unless Mr. Carpenter wants to jump in on it, I don't know.
Okay. Well, I don't, unless anybody has any comments, I don't see any other questions. So with that, we'll call it a day here. Thank you very much, Mr. Carpenter and Mr. Pannon. And I don't think I see Mr. McLaren there. But with that, let's see here. Tomorrow we have a presentation from the Alaska Municipal League on municipal impacts of state budget actions. And so with that, we will be adjourned at 2:57 p.m. Thank you.